Blog Talk Radio.
Howdy, boo. Welcome to Homemade Business 101. My name is Isaiah. I have the pleasure of introducing the host. You know him. He's everybody's hero, my best friend. Will you please join me in welcoming my granddaddy, Baba Jahi?
Well. Good evening. And welcome to another edition of the National Black Unity News Show. And, you know, hey, we got a hot topic we want to deal with tonight and a couple other issues we also want to discuss. But one of the things that's been going on in the African-American community is, and especially since the National Coalition of Blacks for Reparations Now just recently had their annual convention in Detroit. And it was very interesting because I didn't know that Judge Mathis was a Pan-Africanist. He talked about how, you know, he comes on the show, on the air, you know, he does his show. He says, but he always got to put these little corny jokes in there to, you know, to keep his ratings going. But, you know, the thing is, it was there very interesting, you know, listening to him share at the night before Farrakhan spoke, because he spoke that Saturday and Farrakhan spoke that Sunday. And the topics and the issues and how, you know, NCOBRA has been raising this issue all the way back from the days of the Republic for New Africa, which put on the table several years ago, back in the early 60s, the need to have five states. And, you know, Farrakhan, he reemphasized that also, again, when he spoke on Sunday. But, you know, the thing is that this country cannot would not have achieved what it achieved without the fact of that African Americans were enslaved. They had a group of people that was able to work from them, for as Malcolm X used to say, from can't see in the morning to can't see at night. Didn't get paid nothing. And Dr. Claude Anderson has a couple of books out that's really good. He has a book out called Black Labor, White Wealth, which talks about and documents the injustices that was done to us from an economic standpoint of view, and how even though you have whites who say, well, I didn't own my family, you know, we didn't own no slaves. Well, you didn't own any slaves, but you benefited from what slavery did as far as this country. There's no way that you'd have been able to achieve the wealth that you have achieved. There's another book out called Powernomics, which is also a very, very good book that deals with the inequities from an economic standpoint of view. And so, you know, so these are some of the issues that, you know, people really need to look at. And so if you're listening tonight, make sure you pick up those two books, Powernomics by Dr. Claude Anderson and Black Labor, White Wealth by Dr. Claude Anderson. Two very good books that will give you a lot of insight and information concerning this whole issue of reparations and whether or not, you know, Farrakhan was asked, you know, hey, do you think that America is going to pay its debt? Because they are indebted to us. You know, some people say, well, would that mean that every black person get a check? And that's necessarily doesn't mean that, because he said, you know, hey, the way things are set up right now, if they gave each of us a check, there's so many undeveloped minds in our community that fast as they get the check, it all goes right back to the institutions that have perpetuated the oppression in our community. So, you know, it's more than just getting the check. But how about, as he said, some land, you know, some economic stimulus for generations to come, something to be able to help us with changing the burdens that have been placed on us in terms of this whole thing of slavery and what the outcomes that slavery has left, the legacy that slavery has left in our community. I mean, it's left a tremendous scar. Like Malcolm X said, you stick the knife in my back, you pull it out 6 inches, and you ask me how I feel, you know. But you ain't removed the knife. The knife is still there, and even once you remove it, it's still going to leave a scar. So, you know, it's a lot that, you know, people need to look at, as especially this upcoming election is coming up. And, you know, some people say, well, if the Democrats support, raise the issue of reparations, all that's going to do is piss white people off and have them vote for Trump again. Well, you know, as Farrakhan said, hey, maybe it's just time that we have to just play our hand and just, you know, let the chips fall where they may. So, you know, that's the things that are going on in the African-American community right now as we speak. I know David had wanted to share some other information also. Mr. Murphy, you there?
Yes, I am.
I think Mr. Lucas must have joined us, too. Mr. Lucas, you there?
Yes, sir, I am.
Okay, all right.
Okay, first of all, thank you, Brother Satawi, for the introduction and very interesting subject matter. And also want to appreciate my mentor, good friend, big brother, Mr. Achenya Lucas, on the air with us this evening. And, you know, speaking on this subject matter, you know, I have so many mixed opinions about this, but, you know, like I say, well, it's a fact that this country was built on our backs, our labor, our ingenuity, our creation, and people are still benefiting from the work that the foundation that we put forth. But at the same time, knowing the nature or the culture of the United States, you know, they, for some reasons, and I kind of got my own reason and why, but they paid Japanese, and, you know, they would pay other countries, and they would do all of these things, you know, for others. But for their own reason, and they would not wholeheartedly apologize for what they did to our ancestors, and still to us today, because we all get the snowball effect, the roll down the mountain effect from way back then, you know, so we never was able to caught up, and even after slavery, the promises that was made that never was kept, and so, but to be quite frank with you, any person, you know, really logically thinking know that if you're going to be fair about things, that this country owed us. They owed us big time. We fought in every war. We died for this country. We sweated, bleed. They separated. They did everything, every atrocity that could be handed down humanly that was done to us. And they know this. They know it. But at the same time, why would they? If you look at it, if you walk in some other people's shoes sometimes, why would they hit us? Why would they want to support us? Why would they want to empower us? Yeah, we're supposed to be, logically, we fellow Americans, and if we lift each other up, we'll have a strong society and a stronger country. But power is a saying. Power only concedes the power. And it's not going to give it up easily either. You usually have to take it by force, or you have to demand it. And my take on it is this. Yes, it's owed to us. And yes, the playing field has never been equal in this country. But one thing is equal. Each one of us as individuals, you know, this old saying, it's a biblical saying. I don't know if it comes from the Bible. Mr. Lucas can help me out on that. But it's a God bless the child who has his own. Even if you had your own, somebody took it from you, you know, then you can go out and create something else new. And I'm at the state of mind now that I'm not looking for them to do anything for me because actually they still take it from us. They still lock us at, hey, they got more people in jail than there was in the whole history of slavery right now. So things ain't going to change. And if we're going to sit around and wait for them to do right by us, we're going to be sitting for a long time. That's my take on that. But on the other end, you know, since this country was built on our backs, our sweat and our tears, well, that goes to show you, and the type of conditions over there, if we put that work back in, that same blood, sweat, and tears with the wisdom and knowledge that we have today, we can get our own reparations. We can get our own thing, right? In other words, I'm trying to say we can build our own. We cannot sit around and wait for other people to do for us what we can do for ourselves. That's David Murphy's take on this. And it's a powerful subject, and people just like Rachel, people will debate it and fight over it and everything else. But, you know, even though some things are right and just, it don't mean it's going to make it so in this country. And I always say, you know, y'all heard me say this often on these airwaves. There are three sets of laws from my perspective. There's man's law. There are natural laws. And there are God laws. And sometimes we have to operate in all three of them at the same time, simultaneously. But it's the ones that sit on the high is God's law. And God can empower each and every one of us to do for ourselves. So God bless the child who has his own, who able to do for himself in spite of. We did for ourselves back then in spite of. So therefore, ladies and gentlemen, we can do it again. And Mr. Lucas.
Yes, sir.
All right. Welcome to the broadcast. And, you know, a little later on, we're going to be talking about our family. You know, I got some kind of heavy stuff. Cause this upcoming issue is of the National Black Unity News is featuring my own brother and sister on the front cover, and I'll talk a little bit more about that, but I want to kind of stay on this subject matter, this first half an hour of the broadcast, reparations, and everybody has a different opinion, and opinions are just like everything else. You know, everybody has opinions. So what is your thought on this subject matter, sir?
The subject on reformation, I believe, too, we have built this country, and everyone knows we built Washington, D.C. from the ground up, and all the inventions that are in America, if we were to take away all the inventions that black folks invented, we would be back in the dark ages. And I think our biggest problem is unity. If we would be about helping each other and respecting one another, and most of all, if our men, us, would respect our women and show them the respect that they are due, and then I think we could be as powerful as in us is. We are powerful people, and there's nothing that we cannot do. But the problem is we won't do it together. We need to have unity, and where there's unity, there's peace, there's joy, there's wealth, and there's everything that we would ever need if we but have unity and treat each other the way we want to be treated. And it's really simple. If we were to do that, and all we have to do is control one person, and that's me. If I control me, if you control you, if every black individual were to control himself or herself, we would have a power. And we would be the most powerful people on earth. and they wouldn't even think twice about giving us the reformation that we'll do. Like Dr. King said, they write us a check, but it bounced because of insufficient funds. And we need to get together, encourage one another, and never, ever beat each other down, but lift each other up. And there's so much greatness in us. Sometimes I cringe at the greatness that we have and how that we can be everything that we are meant to be. That means kings and queens. If we were to exhibit everything that we really are set out to be, we would be a great people, and the world would see our greatness as it ought to be seen.
All right, fantastic, sir. Hey, Brother Satavi, you know,
yes, sir.
You know, you brought this subject matter to the table, and what is your take on this?
My take is that we, you know, is back in the days when the brother, I remember the brother's name now, the brother who started Mata. He talks about there was two types of reparations, internal reparations and external reparations. Internal reparations is what we control. Make sure that we are seeking out businesses of our own that we can spend our money with and then pull those resources together to do what we can do so that we can capture some of that $2.some trillion that's our part of our gross national product. And then the other part was, he said that, you know, that we need to continue to fight the issue in terms of public policy. John Conyers here put together this bill, H.R. 40, House Resolution 40, and that was just so that they could have a discussion around reparations. And as Farrakhan said, you know, it took 30 years for them just to get to the table and talk about issue. And so the thing is, what do we do to continue to put pressure on these people that, you know, say they're going to represent us, and how do we go about getting them to address the issue? Like I said, several of the Democratic candidates, you know, they've put together some proposals. I'm not familiar with all of the proposals they have put together. Also, there's several current articles that have been written. Paul Coates' son, Ta-Nehisi Coates, he wrote for the Atlantic magazine, the case called The Case for Reparations. And people that's listening, if you go and you pull up Ta-Nehisi Coates' article, The Case for Reparations, you can read how he laid out his perspective on the pain and the stuff that black folk went through. And also, there's another brother, Rasa Islam, who documented the reparations that this country has paid to other nations and other people. And how, you know, and if Farrakhan brought up the fact how this country has supported Israel, you know, with billions and billions of dollars, I forget the exact figure, and that, you know, that the country Israel on its own, you know, wouldn't exist today. So, you know, the thing is, there's no way that you can intelligently talk about the case and status of black folk in this country without addressing the issue of reparations, whether we want to look at it from an internal perspective or external perspective. And the thing is that it's a just issue. And the thing is, do we have the power to be able to make them fess up and pay? Because we know we do. We know from the blood, sweat, and tears that our people have gone through, the murders. I lived in Louisiana for a while. I remember talking to a couple of different people who talked about how they was on a, in a situation where that there was a, you know, a farmhand. And he said, you know, they go to the barn, and the white man's daughter comes in the barn and says, "You better have sex with me, or if you don't, I'm gonna holler you rape me." And he's like, "Oh my God, I got to get the hell up out of here," because he said, you know, that who was gonna listen to him saying that, you know, that he didn't rape the girl. So I said, "So what you had to do?" He said, "I had to leave my family and go." He said, "And I went all the way to Chicago." He said, "You know," and I said, "Well, how'd you go get to Chicago?" He said, "Hey," he said, "I found the first train that was leaving going north." He said, and I had to just hitch a ride on that train. So, I mean, there's white privilege that people have had in this society that just, you know, there's no way to talk about situation of black folk and the atrocities that we have gone through, the slaves watching their daughters getting raped. You know, it was a curse to have a beautiful daughter. Because why? The master, he gonna have her as his own. I mean, I remember reading about Sister Harriet Jacobs, who from North Carolina, and she stayed in an attic for like 3 or 4 years, and she had to stay in the attic because the problem was her master. And again, you know, that's giving white people too much credit. We say that, you know, our master, but he's using that for a term. Her slave master, he wanted her sexually. And so, you know, and she, you know, she refused to bow down to that. So it kept her from being able to see her children. And she had a relative that hid her in an attic and snuck food to her and everything else. And then she finally got out of that attic after about 4 or 5 years being in the attic and was able to escape and go north. And, you know, but and it's called The Story of Harriet Jacobs. I challenge people to read these stories. I mean, you know, stomach the ones that you can, you know, but the thing is we have to know our history so that way when there's an intelligent discussion around the issue of the pain that black people have gone through and how do you – you're not going to change the pain, but how do you repair the damages that have been done, if there can be any repair to the damages that have been done? Because we got psychological scars in terms of people that stops us from being able to achieve. I mean, I remember Sister Patricia Newton saying, right here out of Baltimore, saying how we all was going through post-traumatic slavery syndrome. And, you know, she said, because it had a tremendous impact on us. And so, you know, we need to have, you know, with the powers that be, you know, some type of intelligent discussion to discuss the issue and then come up with what can be done. What, you know, it's just sort of like the same in South Africa when they had Truth and Reconciliation piece that went down and how they dealt with, you know, the former oppressors. And, you know, I remember hearing this white lady said that, you know, we thought, you know, when we released Nelson Mandela, y'all was going to tear every damn thing up, you know. he said if we had known that, you know, that y'all wasn't going to tear every damn thing up, he said, we'd have been released him. So, I mean, but against the show, again, that, you know, that black people, for whatever reason, we just have a kind spirit, you know, very, very kind spirit. And, you know, and that, again, the majority of us are not looking to do to them what they did to us. You know, there is a few people that, you know, that have that feeling, whatever, but the overall masses of black folks, hey, they going about their merry way, man. So, that's sort of my take on the whole issue of reparations.
Okay, fantastic. You know, speaking on that same subject matter, you know, I'm going to just use another group of people, the Jewish people. See, they ain't going to let you forget the Holocaust. You know, they bring that for, they use it also as a gauge to unite themselves. Like Brother Lucas was saying, Chenya Mixon was just saying, you know, they take that unity. No matter how they feel about each other personally, they support one another. They educate their own children. They never let their children forget who they were and where they came from. And so sometimes, you know, we don't have to look far to see examples of how we can take this thing. But there's a difference, a great difference, with them and us. Yes, we are all people. But see, there's a thing in this country and also around this world about black people. We are the most ostracized people. I don't care where we go, just that people had this opinion of looking down. That's why they say the first shall be last and the last shall be first. Even though it is documented that we are the original people. The original. These are our children. They are our offspring. These other races of people. But nevertheless, I think it's like you were saying, brother, it's in our nature. We are not wicked or vicious like some groups of people are. We don't have that mindset to be like that. There's a time for this and there's a time for that, of course. But in our true nature, I think we're closer to God than a lot of other races of people. Because like I said, we are the original people. And with that being said, reparations, yes, is due to us. And I think, like Brother Satavi said, we should never forget who we are and where we came from, what was done to us, and the gauge to keep us strong, to keep us unified. And also, not only, like I say, it's about time, but look how long it took for even the government to even have open discussion about. But nevertheless, because some people pressed on, they are having this conversation today. Thank God for those people who pressed on. And so even on, like I say, that's on the government level. But see, everything starts, you know, this is one of the biggest fears in this country. And that's why they oppress us and keep their foot on us, because they know one thing. See, they also study history as well. Every great dynasty throughout the history of the world, you can go back to the Syrian Empire. You can go back to the Roman Empire. These countries conquer everything. You can come into modern-day United States, can beat everything around them. Most powerful countries in the world, they were the most powerful. The Roman Empire, the Syrian, they were the most powerful in their time in the world. Beat everything around them. The only way these dynasties came down was from within. The people had an uprising. And so, you know, after, like Brother Satavi just said, because they had done so many atrocities to us, they figured that if we ever got free and came into our own, we would have revenge and do the same thing to them. But again, that's not our nature. But at the same time, this country knows that if they ever empower us, it's almost like an indictment to enslave them. That's the way they think. And so, like I said, even from the groundswell, from the street level, from our, even, you know, most of us live here in Baltimore City. And there's all type of atrocities that goes right here in Baltimore City. We the highest murder rate. We got all kinds of negative outlooks about the city. And but at the same time, you can walk to almost every black neighborhood and see the effects, the long-term effects of drugs. You can also walk throughout our community and see the long-term effects of neglect from the city officials. You can see all of these things. You can look at our children, at the school systems, even the things that they're doing to every school that had a black name on it. They just tear it down. Didn't rename it again. Just, I mean, they erase our history. I'm talking about, I mean, everything that's related to us, they're taking away from, destroying our history. And so it's up to us, ladies and gentlemen, to continue this fight, to keep this conversation going. And because right now, say, it maybe took hundreds or 40, 50, 100 years for them to even just talk about it on a national basis, but now at least they are talking about it. And who knows, 50, 100 years now, maybe the mindset has changed, and then, like Mr. Lucas is saying, maybe that check won't bounce this time.
Yes.
But who knows? But like I said, but we have to put in the work today so we can have a better tomorrow. And with that being said, I see that we're here on the top of the hour, and we're going to pretty much change the subject matter to another positive. It's interrelated with the same subject matter. But before we get into that, I just want to have a little station break about the National Black Unity News newspaper. Matter of fact, ladies and gentlemen, today is July the 1st, and our online issue has been issued out today. You can go online, or you can go to our website, www.thenationalblackunitynews.com, and you can actually read the latest issue of the National Black Unity News. And also, I encourage you to get a subscription to the publication. $18.50 a year, we would have that publication sent directly to your home or office or anywhere here in the United States, and we even send it beyond. And ladies and gentlemen, I encourage you, we were just talking about reparations and everything. This is one way how we keep this conversation going. Through publications like the National Black Unity News, we are not kept by anybody. We are independent, and it's by us and it's for us. So I encourage you to support this publication, because this publication is designed to support you, to support us, we. And I'm talking about black people, African American, indigenous people, whatever you call it, your dark-skinned, melanated people. And it's time. Like I'm going to say this. I'm going to shout it to the rooftop. I keep saying we own less than 1% of the media. We have very little voice, but nevertheless, we still have a voice. And we need to support this voice. We need to support this publication. We need to support this radio program, because it's by us and for us. And so, ladies and gentlemen, you know, we can sit around and talk about it, but it's high time we have to be about it. It's time for us to stand up, stand tall, stand in the gap for our people. And that's what Brother Satari is doing. That's what David Murphy, myself, is doing. And that's what Mr. Lucas is a wordsmith, that's what I call him. And he always pins words of unity, love, and most importantly, about God. So you got three brothers on this airways right now. And by the way, ladies and gentlemen, they are both editors in the National Black Unity News. You can find Mr. Chenya Lucas, Page in there, and this brother, I tell anybody, I will put them up to any one of these young rappers out here today when it comes out, how they say, spitting out words. Because he can show them the spawn out of there. I'm going to tell you, I put them with the best. I ain't going to tell you his age, but he's up there. and Brother Satawi, he's been around. I mean, this brother have a track record, man. People don't know. These are true soldiers. I mean, a true soldier. And like myself, he has the battle scars to prove it. But yet he's still wounded, lame, and yet he's still out there on the battlefield in spite of everything else. And we need to support one another, like Mr. Lucas said. Because if we don't do this, who going to do it? And nobody, we have everything we need, ladies and gentlemen. But the most important thing we need is each other. And with that being said, Brother Satavi, I know you want to share some information about what you're doing, sir.
Yes, sir. Let's take this time to, again, just take this commercial break time, just to share with people that there's something that you can purchase. It's called the Vortex. To find out more about it, if you go to www.funding, SUNDINGBY by travel, TRAVEL.com. You can see how the Vortex can be used to, again, change the wealth gap. Change the wealth gap. This is a product that can be used to help faith-based organizations, nonprofits, shelters, organizations that have members and supporters, how they could use this product to raise money through people booking of travel. Expedia and Priceline currently have over $50 billion of money that our people give to them because we're not doing the internal reparations, redirecting our dollars. All we want to do is help continue with this market shift in the travel industry, which is a $8.1 trillion industry, one of the largest in the world, and help our people capture some of those dollars and take advantage of the market shift, because the money is out there. It's out there. We have not, because we do not, and we ask not. So those of you that's listening to this broadcast, all you got to do is give me a call at 252-458-3712, and I can give you the hookup and show you how you can purchase a copy of the Vortex and be able to give out your consumer wholesale booking engine that will allow people to save 85 to 90% of the time. We beat the price that Expedia has and Priceline has. You might say, well, what about Trivago and such and such? Expedia and Priceline, they own all of those companies. They have a monopoly on the market. So, you know, the thing is, you need to know that if you're not in the travel industry, then you wouldn't know that you see cheap tickets and hotels.com. Those companies are owned by the two conglomerates. And so you want to make sure that you know how to participate in this fundraising program called the Vortex. Again, get the website to go to is www.fundingtravel.com, and you can see a presentation. And also, if you give me a call at 252-458-3712, I can hook you up with how you can go about purchasing your very own Vortex distribution link. Okay, David, back to you.
Okay, yeah, and while we are on the commercial break, I also want to share some information about our other guest, Mr. Chenya Lucas. Like I say, this brother, I don't know what to call him, a poet, or I don't know he could tell you who he is, but he does have services that he can help you with. All you need to do is give him your name, your birthday. Mr. Lucas.
Yes, sir.
Would you tell about the services you provide? It's on the website, the National Black Unity News, but I prefer you hear from Mr. Lucas himself about the services, the different type of services he provides, so that he can help you with your special occasions.
Okay, these are the services that I provide, and how is everyone doing? I write specialized poems for any occasion. If you're having a birthday, anniversary, a wedding, or whatever the occasion may be, I write a poem using the first name of the person you want the poem written for, and I've written poems for your pets, you be it a dog or a cat or whatever it is. I can write poems for those, and I have speaking engagements. If you need a speaker, and I also do that. I just had a speech for a church group about 2 weeks ago on unity, and it was great. And hopefully, once that session was over, they'll be able to show more unity than they were before I spoke with them. And all you have to do is give me a call at 443-272-6167. 443-272-6167. Or you can send me an email at positivethinker@comcast.net. Positive Thinker at Comcast.net and leave your telephone number, and I'll talk with you and get more information, and we'll be able to write you a positive poem, one that you will love and it will encourage, and the people that you give it to, they will love you even more than they do now. And God bless you, and David, thank you so much. Back to you.
Okay, thanks a lot. Now, we're going to start this new conversation. I just want to bring this conversation up because that's what's on the front page of the National Black Unity News. I have a picture of my actual brother and my sister. My brother passed in 1999. We call him J.C. And then I had a sister who passed just last month in June. They buried her just last month. Her name is Linda Murphy / Makel. And they were so unique. You know, when I sat there at the funeral, and the bishop, matter of fact, she was right here in Baltimore when she had a funeral. She had one of the largest churches in Baltimore. It's called New Psalmist Baptist Church. And the bishop there is Walter Scott Thomas, which I used to be a member of that church years ago. Yeah, he is a prominent figure in the city and in the faith-based community. But this I can literally say over 100-something funerals. And I know I spoke at over 40 or 50 of them. But this was the first time I ever been to a funeral where somebody eulogized somebody, and the whole subject matter was strictly about that individual, which is my sister. You see, he spoke about my sister. See, my sister battled cancer for years. I mean, many years. She had breast cancer, this type of cancer. Every time she seemed like she would whip one of them, a new one would come up someplace else. And for 35, 40 years, she'd been battling, but you would never, one thing about my sister, you would never, ever know it. When she was younger, she used to be a model. She's like a model because she was small, slender type young lady, beautiful sister. But when Linda walked into the room, you know, she would literally light up her room because she's always smiling and she was very graceful and caring. And you wouldn't ever know that she was sick unless you asked that she, if we knew it, but you know, most people, if you didn't know it, you would never ever think she was sick because she kept her parents up. She didn't have the woe little old me and, well, I'm feeling bad today, no matter what. She carried it so well that, like I said, you would never ever know that she was sick. And not only that, while she was going through all of that personal stuff, she always was out there caring for other people. And it never dawned on me that, you know, that's my sister. I've known her all her life. That's just her nature. But when I looked at it from another perspective, in the way Reverend Thomas put it, well, Bishop Walter Scott, the way he explained it, that she was a shining example as far as the Christian faith is concerned, was a great example of that, because you didn't see the pain, the hurt, the trauma that she was going, all you saw was love, gentleness, and kindness. And then I had another brother, my brother JC, that I had on the front page. Now, he died in 99, but JC came from the same family. We got the same mother, the same father, the same DNA, and all of this kind of stuff, but yet we all are so totally different. How is that? We come from the same family, but yet our characteristics are just opposite sometimes. And J.C. was more, I called him like the warrior of the family. J.C. was a tough guy. You know, J.C. was a fighter, street knowledge, wisdom. You know, he was known throughout the street. He had a reputation in the streets of Baltimore. And J.C. was so, you know, some people would call him a gangster, OG, whatever, you know, how these young people express people who's on the other side of the law, so to speak. But, you know, in Baltimore, a person did what they had to do to survive. And, but J.C., like I say, you know, some people, and I've been around a lot, I've come from up on the rough side of the mountain as well, and I've seen people who say they this and say they that, but J.C. was the real deal, and I knew that. I knew him all my life. J.C. would stand up. He was a man's man, put it that way. And if J.C. was on your side, man, you had somebody that would go all the way out with you. But at the same time, J.C. was just as tender and loving as he could be. So I knew the other side of him. And he was so sick. I'm just giving you an example. I know it's kind of funny. We used, man, I used to laugh about it. There was a little TV show called Family Affair. Little white children, you know, they were adopted or something. But, you know, Jesse was so sensitive that, you know, at the end of the show, he'd be weeping over, you know, tears before. You know, that's how sensitive it was. But at the same time, JC would, JC, like I say, he could, how they say in the street, he could fight. I mean, he really could hold his own. And, but he ended up used to sell drugs. And then he went from selling drugs, then he started using drugs. And when he couldn't get enough, JC would go around the streets of Baltimore, and when they would call him a stick up on. He would actually go out there and rob people, not just any people in the street. He would rob people who had drugs. And take it from not just any small person. He would go after some of the kingpins and rob them too. I even sat in an NA meeting with him one day when he had an anniversary. And the NA person, if you ever been into a Narcotics Anonymous thing, you know, most of them guys come up on the rough side of the mountain, but the branch that he was in, they were some serious gangsters up in that room. And I knew most of them because I knew some of their reputations. And JC stood before them sharing his story. And when JC looked out into the audience and halfway through his spell, he said, "You know what? I robbed half of y'all up in here, didn't I?" And I looked at him and half of them was shaking their head, "Yep." and I said, "My God." But in his case, but when JC, he ended up being blind and then, you know, he died. But let me just say this. JC became one of the most pod paper. He had assisted and helped hundreds of people. He sponsored literally hundreds of people in the NA program. JC went around the city and people would come to him because they knew if JC could get clean, anybody could get clean. Because he was when JC did it, he went all the way out with it. But when he got himself together, man, I'm talking about some of the toughest guys in this city. JC sponsored. Half of these prominent preachers in this thing, JC was their sponsor. And so I'm just saying this to say this, ladies and gentlemen. Even when JC passed, you know, I lived in Emerson Village. And there was a graveyard out there. He's buried out there in Catonsville. But do you know they blocked off, the police department blocked off every street up Emerson Avenue? And he had police escort all the way to, you know, they carried him to the gravesite. And I never seen that for anybody, you know. I'm just saying, but they did that for him. But in any case, the subject is this. You know, when I watched my sister, you know, in the funeral last month, you know, I have a lot of what you call people that I admire. Some people, some may call them role models. But, you know, I have people like John Johnson from Ebony Magazine, the guy who also did Black Enterprise, the lady Susan Taylor from Essence Magazine. You see, y'all know I'm a publisher. These are the type of people I kind of idolize because I was amazed at the feat that they accomplished even in their day and time. And then I had people like, I call them Marcus Garvey and Malcolm X. You know, I kind of feel their spirit. You know, I kind of got that spirit within me. And I looked at them, but did you know when I went to their funeral, for the first time, I took a hard look at my own brothers and sisters, my own family. And it was just an awakening thing when I found out that I had so many heroes and sheroes right here in my own family. And I asked the question in the National Black Unity, why did God create families? Now I got the answer, because he put those people around us that would nurture us, care for us. He also put the people opposite of us, people that would stab you in your own back, would put you down, and would naysay you. But at the same time, he would show you the same people, some of the same people in that same family would be the only person in this world who would stick by you when nobody else will, who will love you unconditionally. Your mother, your father, your grandparents, people like them, man. If you look at your family, you need to take a real hard look at your family. You will find that God strategically put you in a family where you have all of those type of nurturing and prepare you for this life. And so, you know, I'm saying this to say this. I'm going to just open this because we don't have too much time left. But Mr. Lucas.
Yes, sir.
When I look, like I say, when I looked at my own family, man, and I know you're a God-fearing gentleman, what is your take on why did God create families from your own perspective?
Why did God create families?
Yes, or why he put you in a family.
Okay,
yes,
why he put you in a family. Okay. God put us in a family to unify our thinking, and so that we could have someone to love and someone to love us, and somebody that we could take care of, and somebody that could take care of us without any payback. We don't have to pay them. We just do it because of love and because God put in us the innate ability to just care and love. And knowing that if there's nobody else in the world, we can always depend on family and we can help them and then make a difference in somebody else's life. And I believe that's why God put us in a family. So you say that it's not right for man to be alone, not only giving us a mate, but when we have a mate and then we can help our family and just encourage one another and unify one another.
All right, that's beautiful, sir. Brother Satari,
yes,
what is your take on family? How do you see family?
Well, that's a loaded question. I used to have a saying, you know, I used to see family in one hand. In one sense, I used to see families, I used to call them biological associates. And then on another hand, you know, when I started looking at my family different, I was like, you know, hey, your sisters, they really love you. So, you know, you have to drop that term biological associates. You know, y'all are connected because they come through and support me in many ways that I, you know, would not be able to in terms of supporting myself. I think about when me and Cynthia ran the center. My father helped teach tennis. He taught some of the children how to swim. My mother and my aunts, they helped us out with suppers. You know, my sisters, you know, they helped out as much as they could with different ceremonies and programs we had as far as getting people to support us. I mean, I even did my next to my baby sister, I even did her naming ceremony for her daughter, Kalia, at the Culture Center. And, you know, I did the naming ceremony and, you know, it was just a beautiful time. So, you know, but I used to have the term, like I said, I used to refer to family as biological associates because I used to be angry with my family. But as I reflected and thought more back about what, you know, what they were able to do and what they have done, you know, hey, I don't know where I'd be without my family. So, again, I mean, it's a very, very heavy topic. And, you know, I think a lot of times, you know, a lot of us, we take family members for granted, and it's important. It's like right now, I'm here. Primary reason I'm here in Baltimore right now is to help my wife with taking care and stabilizing situation for her 92-year-old mother who has dementia. So, you know, and that's a big challenge because every day, as my wife reminds me, she says, remember, when you step out the room, you come back in the room, even though you might have spoke to mom earlier, just when you step back in the room, it's like you just entered the room for the first time and you speak to her all over.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and so that you know, that takes some getting used to, you know what I mean? Because, you know, you figure, okay, I just spoke to them once, you know what I mean? But then you know, when you have an attitude about it, you know, then, you know, I wish and I pray that I'm able to live those many years, and that when I get to that ripe age, that there's going to be someone around to help with making sure that I am, you know, sane, healthy, and taken care of. So this is very, like I said, it's a loaded question, brother. It's a loaded question.
Yes, it
God bless you, my brother.
Like I say, yeah, that's why I said, you know, that's why I brought this subject matter up, you know, because sometimes, like you said, Brother Satav, we take family members for granted. Now, like I say, just like love and hate, some of your family make it can take you there. I mean, they will take you there, too, you know. Get on your last nerve, someone will. But like I said, but on the flip side, outside of God's love, what I've seen through my family is unconditional love. And that's the purest example next to God's love. It, you know, who can love you like a mother? Who stands by you like a brother or sister? Who can forgive you because they know you're all your ins and outs, your little secrets
in
and all
spite.
Of that kind of stuff, you know? You know, and yet, you know, but you know, but sometimes y'all can't get along, but when somebody else step in, when the fan, you know, when the stuff hits the fan, who stand by you? And so, you know, I'm saying this, you know, we need to appreciate our family members and look at them in a different light, because now that I've, you know, it just rung a bell at their funeral, then I'm sitting right here, and I got a picture up on my wall. I have my grandmother and grandfather on both sides of my family. And these are the ones that departed. Even my brother JC's on this picture, my father and my nephew and my best friend, my aunts. And all of them, I played such a significant role in my life. Each and every one, I mean, in their own way. Like I said, just like I was the clerk, they would help, you know, I'm no God mode, but they the ones like help finish the job. They the ones that molds us to make us what we are today. You know, they have so much impact on our lives. And so we need to take, you know, while they're still available, you know, I brought this subject matter up and I even put it in the publication because sometimes, most of the time, ladies and gentlemen, we can look at all of those people on the outside who made great significance and changes in people's lives, like the Malcolm X, the Marcus Garvey. But then again, we have some powerful heroes and sheroes right within our own immediate family. We just don't look at them that way. And high time we need to go ahead, brother. We need to appreciate them, love them.
That's so true because
go ahead,
brother. Dr. Leona Bias, Lynn Bias' mother, you know, we used to have her speak at our center. And, you know, I never forget one time she was speaking and, you know, she was sharing information. And one of the people in the audience said, you know, I can't stand my mother. And she says, you can't stand her. She says, but one day, she says, when she's no longer here, so you're going to miss that voice. You're going to miss that voice you can't stand. And so, you know, and I thought that was so powerful in terms of her just sharing that, saying that, you know, that, yeah, we have people, they pluck a nerve or whatever, but there comes a time when they no longer around, you wish they were still here that they could pluck a nerve.
That's right. That's right.
That's right. And so that's what I'm saying. You know, we ain't got that much time left. But you know, I appreciate you both on this airways, and we had a nice discussion. But you know, we got a few minutes left, and before we leave, I just want to depart with this. You know, the question I asked, why did God put us in the family? Because to me, it's just a shining example of His love. That just directly or indirectly, you know, it just that's straight up love. That's the closest thing to God love is my family love. And with that being said, ladies and gentlemen, get your latest copy of the National Black Unity News. The hard copy should be out this week or early next week. It's already at the printers, and the online version is available. Get your copy today. Mr. Lucas, you got any departing words, sir?
Just one thing, let us love and encourage one another and remember that the National Black Unity News is a family. And let's encourage our families.
I like that, yes, sir. Brother Satari, back to you, sir.
Yes, sir. All right, I was supposed to open up with this, but I'm going to close out with this. This is the reading for the day from Daily Motivations for African-American Success by Dennis Kimbrough, July 1. Get your butt out of the way. Quote, believe in yourself and your abilities. They are. There are lots of other folks who will tell you it can't be done. That's from Jasmine Guy, television and film star. Unfortunately, too many people cannot specify what holds them back. All too frequently, they feel there's something, whether it's called hard luck or the system, that binds them to lives of misery and poverty. Some even boast of what great heights they could reach if only they could sever the cords that bind them. Surely, they could change their lives for the better if they could remove the shackles, real or imagined, that chain them to their limited selves. On many occasions, I've counseled men and women in a variety of occupations, and I've heard all kinds of stories. Very often, people have said to me, Dr. Kimbrough, I want to do this, but. Or Dr. Kimbrough, I would like to have that, but. Or Dr. Kimbrough, I could become this, but. One day, I got my fill of those excuses and reasons for inactivity, and I blurted out, you know, you could be what you want to be, do what you want to do, and have what you want to have if you would just get your butt out of the way. For the most part, we know what we want out of life. Not only do we know what we want, we know how to get it. Most of us have concluded that we have the time, the energy, the skill, and the opportunity. And the only thing standing in the way of us enjoying whatever we desire is our big excuse. If you want to achieve more, declare your reasons unacceptable, your excuses inexcusable, and then get your butt out of the way. Get rid of the word butt. All right. It's the difference between success and failure. Okay, we can go on for a little bit longer. I can extend the show for about another 15 minutes. If y'all want to talk about that last thing I just read. Yeah.
Thank you.
Well, I like that. I like that.
I do too.
Get your butt out of the way.
Yeah, well,
see, I got a poem working on that now.
All right. Okay, guess what, then? Now, I was hoping that you said, but guess what? With that being said, you know, and we talk about reparation, we talk about family, now we talk about getting any out with no more excuses. And so, you know, let's tie this all together. You know, Brother Satav and I often talk, and Brother Lucas and I often talk a lot. And I come to find out one thing, and it's biblical. In the beginning, they say when God created the heavens and the earth, and then after he did all of these great and wonders, he made the day, the night, and everything else, put all these wonderful things on this earth and breathed life into everything, then he created man. And then, if I'm correct, Mr. Lucas will straighten me out if I'm, you know, like I said, I'm advert, you know, I'm not going to quote verbatim, you know, what the words say, word for word, but this is my take on this. God, when he created man, even before the woman came on the scene, the first thing he did was put man to work. He told him to tend the garden.
That's right.
He said, nurture it. He said, protect it. He said, multiply, whatever you do. You know, and he put man to work. And my take on this, because God often spoke in parables. And when he said, in the garden is a metaphor to me as us as an individual. God put so many wonderful things inside of us, but we need to nurture it. We need to grow. We need to multiply those gifts that God gave us. And it's also written that your gifts will make a way for you. And with that being said, ladies and gentlemen, I believe, this is just David Murphy, and David Murphy just speaks his mind. Sometimes I'm crazy as a bed, but some might say. But there's some people say David Murphy's a genius, some might say. But the bottom line is this. I am one of a kind.
Mm-hmm.
There is no other before me, and there will be none other after me, the same as I.
Right.
And so each and every one of us are unique in our own uniqueness. And I thank God, because I sit in a place with the National Black Unity News, with brothers like on this airways with me right now, Mr. Chinya Dukes and Brother Satari. I've known these gentlemen for years now. And I watch them grow. And I watch and I see how they not only have they nurtured their own gifts, but these are the type of brothers who take their own gifts and nurture others with it. They give their time, money, resources. Both of you brothers do this. And unselfishly and giving, and you dedicated your lives to serving others. And I also call myself, you know, there's nothing wrong with naming yourself. I also call myself a servant of service. But see, it's mm-hmm. not all about me. It's about us. We.
Us.
We're all in this together. Just like we said, family. It's all of us. We are part of a unit. Reparations, like I say, we are part of a unit. We are our ancestors that put blood, sweat, and tears just for you and I, the three of us on the air, to be on these airwaves.
Mm-hmm.
And so it's a continuation of it. But that being said, I'm kind of pumped up right now, so I'm going to stop shutting my mouth up and go to Mr. Lucas. Whatever's on your mind, sir, let it flow. You want to cite a poem or poet, whatever you want to do, sir. Go ahead.
I'm just asking everyone out there to just get a copy of the National Black Unity News and let us unify one another and encourage one another. We can do it. Don't let Willie Lynch he's gone on, but he's still controlling us, telling us how we should act and how we should be. That does not have to be the case. We can love each other and encourage one another. And most of all, we can respect our women the way we ought to. And let's just do that and raise our sons to respect their mothers and the women that are in their lives. And David, I just thank you for all that you do. And you are a difference maker. Brother Atera, I'm thankful to God for you also. And that last little bit you did, get your butt out of the way. And I hope you allow me to use that, because I'm working on a poem now that's with the butts. And thank you so much, and God bless you all.
Yes, sir, you can use it.
Thank you.
And we being nice, ain't we? Since you say a butt, right?
Yeah.
Okay. Well, there's a story. We got time. And I used to open up when I used to have some time with stand in front of people and give a speech, because like Moses, some would say, I'm slow of speech. You know, I don't dot my I's and I don't cross my T's. And, some people have what we used to call in the neighborhood, what they call the gift of gab. And so over the years, when I first started, I would sweat and I would shake, and I could never put my sentences together because I was so nervous. And my mm-hmm. mother told me, see, this is the power of family. My mother told me this parable, this story. And I know y'all heard this before, but it was about this elderly man, and this young boy was approaching this village. And some of the villagers approached the two. And the little boy was riding on this donkey, and the elderly man was leading the donkey into the village. And they approached him and told the little boy, you ought to be ashamed of yourself, sitting up there riding a donkey, young as you are. And here this old man sitting up there walking. You know, and so the old elderly man and the young boy reasoned together. And so they came to the conclusion. So the elderly man got up on the donkey, and the little boy started leading them through the village. So as they ventured further into the village, some more villagers approached. And they told the elderly man, say, mister, you ought to be ashamed of yourself sitting up there riding. Strong as you supposed to be, and that little boy down there pulling the donkey, you ought to be ashamed of yourself. So they what's further on the building. They just got there and they reasoned one more time. They put their heads together. But just when they started doing that, they was approaching this little raggedy bridge, a little shaky old bridge, the Great Cross. So what they decided to do was pick up the donkey and carry the donkey. But when they got on this little rickety bridge, it went back and forth, back and forth. And unfortunately, the donkey fell over into the river and drowned. And my mother told me at the conclusion of this story, she said, David, the moral of this story is don't lose your ass trying to please everybody. And so with that being said, gentlemen, is this. When your ass is in the way, you're taking opinions from this person, this place. Like I said, God gave you your own, you know, your own gifts. Even to this day, right now, you can hardly shut me up now. Because over the years, because I kept on standing, you know, even though when I didn't want to, God would always push me up front. I would run back to the back. He would always push me in front of people. The type of business, I always had to talk to people. But see, when you're passionate about something, with those gifts I was speaking about within each one of us, your gifts could be cooking. It could be just being a street cleaner. It could be anything else. Just be the best at it you could try. Just do you. Be you and do you. But when you nurture your gifts, as I said before, your gifts will make a way for you. And when I'm a part with this, and like Brother Satavis said, you know, about the butt, you know, we can come up with all the excuses in the world not to do something. Mm-hmm. We can always find some type of reasoning not to do this or not to accomplish this. But ladies and gentlemen, I'm going to say this to you. We are unique, and God put special gifts within each and every one of us. You use those gifts. If you don't do anything else in this world, if I ever had to say anything to you, stop looking all out, looking at other people, looking at all these other outside resources. Look within. Look at God. God put special gifts. If you nurture those gifts, I guarantee you, you really nurture those gifts in God, they will make a way for you. So with that being said, I go back to you, Mr. Lucas, and I was hoping that you would come up with a poem or something. You know, I'm trying to throw a hint out here, but, you know, it's, I know you got one somewhere in there. Well, then again.
You was hoping that I would come up with a poem, huh?
Yeah, I was hoping that you sang the poem that's actually in the National Black Unity News, this issue.
Let me see, because that one, it just came out. Come back to me in a minute. I get a poem.
Okay. All right. So with that being said, Brother Satavis.
Oh, I got it right now.
I knew you would. Yes, sir.
Okay. Poem on unity. U is for unity between one and two that brings us together and make us stick like glue. N is for the necessity to grasp each other's hand, to embrace and encourage, be we a woman or a man. I is for our inner strength, even down to our bones, showing we are stronger together, much more than we are alone. T is for our magnificent team, the National Black Unity News, stretching throughout the community and world, using all of our masterful tools. Y is for our awesome youth, for whom we set an example, being cautious of what we say and do. Yes, we mold for them a great sample. And that is my poem for today on unity.
All right. Thank you, brother. And
thank
I appreciate
you all. God bless
you. Because he had penned so many poems. He got so out of me. And matter of fact, ladies and gentlemen, look forward to his book coming out soon. And
that's right.
And so, like I say, but you can find his information on the National Black Unity News. Get your copy today, ladies and gentlemen. So back to you, Brother Satavi.
All right, all right. We're going to go ahead and close out with our theme song called It's My Time. And, you know, again, this is a song that an artist by the name of Paul Hoffman told me that I could use for the things that I do. And he used to write jingles for Ford. He was the one that came up with the jingle, "Have you driven in a Ford lately?" But, you know, and he had a very, very interesting story. Talked about how when he had to get his life together, how his wife came home one day, and he had took out this record set, and he was building a bicycle for this man that was supposed to be in the room. And he kept telling his wife, "Don't you see him sitting right over there in the chair? I'm building him a bike." But anyway, he talked about how, you know, his drinking had gotten to the point that he was hallucinating. And so, you know, he had a very, very powerful story and how he overcame that and went on to do some magnificent stuff. So this song is called It's My Time. It's a very, very powerful song. He has an album called SuccessSongs.com. If you go to SuccessSongs.com, you can download this song along with several other powerful songs that he has that I listen to each and every day. This one's called It's My Time.
Time to let go, get ready to fly. Open
All right. Good night. Good night. Good night.
Good night. God bless.